former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonantoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Hour number two of the Lombardi Line. We're back here on VSiN from downtown Las Vegas, Circus Sportsbook Studio. I'm Ben Wilson in for Stormy. We have Michael Lombardi here and a lot to get into in hour number two of the show. Some burning questions now for the Atlanta Falcons. And D. Orlando Ledbetter joins us in about a half hour from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Outstanding beat reporter there for the Falcons. There's some injury news, too, coming out of Atlanta today. So Orlando's been a busy man, as you already get. It's this time of year, right? As far as camp, Michael, you're getting injuries left and right here. And the latest one, too, aircast. You never want to hear those two words. But aircast for the Atlanta Falcons here and their wide receiver, Rondale Moore. Just getting the update here. This was from Mark Raimondi, covers things from ESPN for the Falcons. And end of the joint practice there down in Miami. Non-contact injury toward the end of practice. Not good news there for one part of that receiving core in Atlanta.
Yeah, it sounds like an Achilles, non-contact, and they have an air cast that bring it in that broke a bone. It's kind of hard to have a broken bone in a non-contact, so that tells you something else. Look, they needed Rondale Moore. I mean, Ray McLeod was going to be one of their guys. They need more speed. I know nobody wants to hear this about the Atlanta Falcons because they've spent all these draft choices on first round on skill players, but they're one of the slowest offenses in football. You know, they really are. Pitts is not a tight end. He's a wide receiver. So let's put that off to the side. People match up to him like he's a wide receiver. They don't treat him like a tight end because he doesn't block anybody. So they were looking this offseason. They've been really trying to get speed. Moody was a guy that they signed from Chicago, a guy that can run a little bit. Rondale Moore, I mean, Mac Hollins gave him some plays down the field that they weren't able to get. Let's face it, Drake London's a good player. But Drake London's not a guy who's going to change the game at all. He's going to catch the ball. He's going to not take the top off the defense. And so I think, to me, this is a significant injury. Rondale Moore was a guy to give him a little bit of juice, some of those plays. I think they're hoping Ray McLeod can do the same.
Yeah, based on some of the quotes, too, from Kirk Cousins after practice, saying, you know, we're praying for him, hoping for the best. That doesn't sound all that optimistic, especially when you're talking non-contact injury there. This one, not non-contact, but not great for the Indianapolis Colts here. Josh Downs goes down with an ankle injury. This is the report there from ESPN, needing him to be helped off the field there by a couple of staffers here. And it sounds like a high ankle sprain from Jeremy Fowler of ESPN. And talk about another guy critical to team success. I mean, you catch almost 70 balls as a rookie last year. A lot of people were really assuming that relationship between Downs and Anthony Richardson would really take off going into year two.
Yeah, and I mean, that's one of the things that hurts young players when they miss time. It's hard to catch that time up, right? You know, Richardson needs Josh Downs. I mean, he had 68 catches. You know, and they only had two touchdowns, but the reality of it is he was the second best receiver on the team. Alex Pierce was the third leading receiver with 32. So, you know, you lose a guy like that, but at least they've lost him early in camp where you have a chance to get him back. But the timing between he and Richardson is so critical.
Yeah, apparently this was a tackled out of bounds, too, from this report. Shane Steichen was just furious and basically called out. It was the safety, Nick Cross, after practice. Like, we got to be smart. What are we doing? And you talk so much about, you know, how coaches are holding teams accountable in preseason. I mean, I'm sure there's nothing more that boils your blood than seeing a guy tackle a key starter out of bounds in a 7-on-7 drill, and now he's out with a high ankle sprain.
Right? I mean, you have to show poise. It's like what happened at the Giants, Lions. I mean, you know, they deserve to get fined. I mean, if you're stupid enough to throw punches to a helmet with a fist, I mean, you're gonna break your hand. It's dumb. It's really dumb, and we're not getting any better doing that. And if you lose your poise in that situation, you'll lose it in a game.
Yeah. Yet it seems to happen. No matter how many times you talk about it, it always ends up happening. Okay, at least for some positivity here, reports out of New England camp, they are very, very high and optimistic about their wide receivers. That's what's on Michael's mind today as we go to Fox. Where everyone's 0-0. Okay, there's reason for optimism, Michael. What do you make of those comments out of Foxborough?
Well, I mean, that's one of the great things about the Patriots, the PR. I mean, we saw that documentary this year about how, you know, Belichick was basically working off in the side selling hamburgers during Sunday, and that the Kraft family was building all those championship teams. I mean, this is just part of the propaganda that goes on out of there. You realize, Ben, one receiver last year, Juju Smith-Schuster, scored a touchdown. Every other one of their 14 touchdowns came from a tight end or a running back. Think about that.
Yeah.
So, you know, look, Bourne's coming off. He's still on PUP. They drafted Polk, who's probably going to be a good player. DeMario Douglas has got a chance to be a good player. Didn't score a touchdown. But to me, I think what makes more sense for New England is to figure out who's going to be their starting tackles. Right now, they don't have starting tackles. Michael Owanu, they had to put him in at guard. He's so far out of shape, right? They moved Calvin Anderson over to right tackle. And Okafor is their starting left tackle, who wasn't good enough to start in Pittsburgh. So there's a lot of questions on this team that have to get answered in the offensive front. And I think receivers are the last one. They can pretend that they're happy with their young receivers. What to me is it's just part of this whole cover-up that's going on in New England. You know, you're not happy with your receivers. You're just you don't want to be embarrassed by teams not wanting to come to New England and play there.
For the last minute, Michael, all I can picture now is just Bill Belichick in a chef's hat, with the apron.
I mean, think about it. I mean, you watched that documentary, Ben. I mean, they gave the guy like he was nothing. They treated him like he was a nobody, you know. And then they pretended again, like this situation. Well, we didn't know, you know, that we didn't have anything to do with it. Just like, oh, we didn't know. Families that weren't getting, you know, treated after the game. Of course they did. One of the things everybody complained about when I worked there was how badly they treated, you know, you couldn't get a club seat. You could not get a club seat when you work for the Patriots. And they're back to that same mentality. I mean, try ordering a legal pad in that building today.
Just the legal pad. That's so funny. Well, I also think of, okay, who will be the, not to say like scapegoating position, but if you're already saying this and you're already kind of, you have a lot of room too. If you're saying you love your wide receivers, well, it's very easy to say, well, pass protection wasn't good. Quarterback play, we couldn't showcase our wide receivers enough. Is it as simple as saying, and you've got, you know, Jacoby Brissett, a guy who has, you know, been in this organization across multiple stints, and you have a quarterback of the future they're trying to groom in Drake May. Is it the O-line that on paper looks to be a bottom five unit that will be kind of the obvious scapegoating unit there, Michael, when you think about how important that will be to success and how it doesn't look very good right now, at least on the surface?
Well, it's going to be everything that's going to kill them. They have no tackles. They gave Owanu the big contract to have him be the right tackle. What they missed was the fact that he was going to eat himself out of that contract once they gave it to him. And so he comes in at 360, and they're like, wait a minute, we better put him in at right guard. He can't play right tackle, which everybody in the building knew that was going to be a problem if he ate himself out of that. There is no left tackle, right? They have no – that's one of the problems last year on the team. They, you know, Trent Brown played left tackle, but he didn't play it with any energy or any heart. You know, the inside of the line, Cole Strang, they had a he got hurt last year. He's still on PUP. Jake Andrews came in, had an injury. He's now on IR for the season. I mean, this offensive line is not very good, and they're going to have to spend a lot of time getting it fixed. It's going to be the major problem. They've got Ramondre Stevenson signed to an extension, right? Hunter Henry's a good tight end, but, like, it's hard to move the football when you can't control the line of scrimmage.
Chukwuma Okorafor has two career snaps at left tackle. Last time I checked, you're trying to protect the guy's blind side. You'd like a little more experience there. Hunch.
You know, who's the right tackle? I mean, Calvin Anderson. You know, he missed all of last year with hepatitis because he went on a safari in Africa with his family. And when he came back, he had all these problems. He missed almost a whole year.
Don't they make you take those pills when you go to I went to South Africa. You got to take a whole cocktail.
Look, I'm not a doctor, but that's what happened to him. So look, that this whole team is kind of like, oh, everything was Bill's fault. But it was a remarkable when they how many guys have they signed that were Bill's guys? Stevenson being one. Owanu being another. I mean, they brought him back, right?
Hey, at least all the quarterbacks are going to get to see equal time, it sounds like, in
front
of that porous
line. I think that's why the
numbers
moving, Ben. Yeah. I think everybody feels like, okay, you know, they're going to play everybody, but their line, who's going to protect for them? Who's going to block? You know? The guy that goes in there, Joe Milton might be able to run around and make some plays, but we've seen Bailey Zappe turn the ball. Like, do they really need to let Bailey Zappe play? I mean, do you need to see more Bailey's? I saw enough of Bailey Zappe last year.
Yes.
Do I need more?
Look, and for preseason context, right? Yes, you're throwing out Jacoby Brissett, Drake May, Bailey Zappe, you know, Joe Milton. Is that better than what Carolina will be trudging out, not playing anybody? Yes. Is that worthy of being nearly a touchdown favorite? You cannot convince me there is any way that is possible.
No, you can't convince me either. They're not going to play. Look, and here's the real question about New England, and I know we didn't want to make this a New England a condensed segment, but I mean, you remove the best defensive coach in the history of the game from that team. Now, who's going to – and look, you know, he's hard to replace as head coach. But to lose him, I mean, DeMarcus Covington, I feel badly for him because he's got to replace a legend. And, you look, I think they're good on defense. They have some good players. I think they're slow at linebacker. I was surprised they signed Tavai back, but they can rush the passer, especially if Judon's doing well. But Jennings was played really well last year for them, but once again, had an offseason where he got health, really got heavy. He's almost 300 pounds. Uche could really be a good rusher if he can come in and play to the level they need him to. Look, they've got talent there. There's no question in the front.
Yeah. That line just hit 7 at DraftKings. And we're talking 33.5 on a total. I get that there was a release from respected betting groups at 1.5. 1.5 and 7. Those numbers are not the same, especially in NFL football.
I mean, I don't think that betting group would release it at 7.
No, they would not.
I mean, let's go. Let's ask them.
What goes up will come down in a lot of these NFL, especially the preseason line moves here, where there's so much variance on that. Also, we will see Justin Fields get a couple series, it sounds like, in the preseason opener. No Russell Wilson, though, Michael. Pittsburgh looks like 2.5-point dogs right now across the board. This is Friday night against Houston.
Yeah, I mean, look, I mean, Russell Wilson, I said this today, too. I mean, I'd be worried about this calf. I mean, we saw what happened last year to Joe Burrow and his calf.
Yes, we did. It wasn't exactly the smoothest of transitions into the start of a new year. Russell Wilson, Justin Fields, that debate, and will Brandon Ayuk be a part of that franchise? We still await more what happens there in Pittsburgh. We'll transition, talk a little Atlanta Falcons, burning questions for the Falcons, followed by D. Orlando Ledbetter in about 20 minutes, all still to come right here on the Lombardi Line.
Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Getting all sorts of news trickling out now, Michael, for week one of the NFL preseason. We love this time of year. Back with Michael. I'm Ben here on the Lombardi Line. We'll get into some Atlanta Falcon burning questions, but some line movements going on, and God bless Andy Reid and the Kansas City Chiefs. Yet another year. Another preseason week one, where we will see quarterback Patrick Mahomes in the starters, at least playing a quarter. That was the report from Andy Reid. I'm kind of surprised that even, you know, like first quarter spread didn't really move at all. It's basically a pick 'em, 7.5 first quarter total, slight juice to the under. I kind of think people would be intrigued in that. Kansas City at Jacksonville coming up, Michael, on Saturday.
Well, I mean, look, Andy Reid, you know, I know I sound old school like the grumpy guy on the lawn, but football's a game that you can't play half-heartedly. Football's a game that requires mental and physical toughness. And you don't get that by whistling. You don't get that by saying, we'll do it tomorrow. You don't get that by not having hard practices. You know, it takes a lot to be great. It takes to become a champion. It takes doing things that are hard. It takes being boring. I mean, I think that's ultimately what Andy Reid does. He just keeps going. He starts over. Their pad level is usually pretty good. It's not perfect. I mean, they're not going to be perfect coming out of camp. I'm sure they're trying to figure out where they are with their offensive line. Look, Morris got hurt in camp. We don't know who the left tackle is. They may have to start the rookie from BYU. I can't say his name, but they may have to start him. So there's a lot of question marks about this team. But here's what I keep saying. And I was told this back in 1991 by the great Bill Parcells. He said to me one day, kid, I got to tell you something. Offensive linemen are like boxers. If they don't spar, they can't fight. And so you got to get them out there and you got to stop worrying about injuries. I mean, Christ, you know, Rondale Moore had a serious injury today in non-contact. Injuries are going to happen. The best line I've ever heard about injuries is Belichick's. Tell me when they're going to happen and I'll take the player out to play before. Yeah. You just don't know. You just to build your team the right way, you've got to be able to handle it. Now, I'm not saying you got to overwork the team, but you got to have contact. I mean, that's why Zach Taylor and he pussyfoots around with his team in the Now he's been 0-4 the first 2 weeks of the season. Now he's woken up. He's like, oh, I better get on this.
There's clearly a balance there. Yes, Kingsley Suomataya is that BYU rookie O lineman for the Chiefs. You figured you'll see a good dose of him.
Rolled off your tongue perfectly. Well, it's never rolling off mine.
You know, it's okay. We only need one of us to be able to get it, Michael. That's all right. That's what I'm here for. And then Pittsburgh too. Like we know that is an identity of a team that everyone's talking quarterback here, and that's what we'll now want to watch for the rest of the season because as Ellie Bowman, our producer, looked up the odds on Russell Wilson. You know, he's down. He was -1,000 to take the first snap in Week 1. It's down to more like -350 now, as it clearly is looking like more of a competition. And you know Mike Tomlin, like he wants to see some physicality. He wants to at least have that showcased at some point in preseason for his guys. And as long as this calf injury continues to plague Russell Wilson, that will only hurt his chances since he's got to get out there, you'd think, at some point and at least prove himself to the coaching staff in preseason.
I mean, how would it look? Just think about this. How would it look?
I think we lost Michael. We'll get him back here momentarily. I think what Michael was about to say, how would it look if Russell Wilson went an entire preseason? Just zero things whatsoever as far as actual snaps taping. And then all of a sudden, Week 1, here you go, and he is the Week 1 starter. I think a lot of us all thought that when the initial deal was done and you had Russell Wilson and Justin Fields, To sense that it was -1,000 would have been crazy, Michael, as far as, Wilson taking the first snap. Those odds in particular, they've obviously come down, but it would have been crazy just the way that was initially formulated of, this is always going to be Wilson's job no matter what.
Well, I think this, it would have been Wilson's job if he would have practiced, but Mike Tomlin can't stand in front of his team and say Russell's the quarterback when he hasn't participated. It's impossible. If you're saying to the team, we're going to play the best players have to be out there. And every guy on the Steelers, all 90 players in that locker room in Latrobe know that Russell hasn't played well the last three seasons. So he doesn't come in with Super Bowl credentials. He doesn't come in with Pro Bowl, a Hall of Fame. He comes in with a guy trying to rebound from his career. He's like the boxer who once was a heavyweight champion who's trying to come back and get the crown again.
Yeah, got to get some
sparring. He's
on
the downside.
No sparring yet it's just been the tackling sleds for Wilson. That's the only thing he's sparring with, and he's lost those sparring battles so far. Yeah,
I could see what Mike's doing. Mike's saying, hey, look, I'm going to look at the guy. Now, the guy who's going to win this job, and I've said it from day one, whoever protects the football the best.
And that's now, if you get through the three preseason games, we will not see Wilson Game 1. It will be at least a couple drives for Justin Fields. That's the report here for Pittsburgh in their preseason opener. For more really good insights onto the preseason, a lot of articles up right now at VSiN.com that you can check out of Michael's that he's written. Become a VSiN Pro subscriber. Just another friendly reminder here. This week only, three-year offer, $350. You can either be a first-time subscriber or extend your current subscription at VSiN.com/subscribe. Or if you're a first-time subscriber, VSiN.com/special, which that saves you over 75% off the monthly price there. 3 years of VSiN Pro for $350. All right, let's get into some burning questions here, Michael. We'll talk to D. Orlando Ledbetter. Excited for that conversation coming up in about 10 minutes from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. For the Falcons, I think the first thing we'll be asking him is what has he actually seen from Kirk Cousins in his rehab off the Achilles injury? That has to be a big talking point with how much has been invested at the quarterback spot for Atlanta in a weak division, yet still a team that has a lot of holes to fill on that roster entering this year.
Yeah, no question. And I don't know if Orlando is going to be really able to tell us that because we haven't seen the speed of the game yet, right? I think it's one thing to have practice, can't hit the quarterback, he's in a yellow jersey, all that. There's going to have to be, can he throw it? Now, what his arm looks like, I'm sure Orlando can give us those answers. But, the other question we have to ask him as it relates to, what does Michael Penix look like? What does he look like? How's his development? We have all these quarterbacks we're talking about. We're not talking about him, but I think we should.
Yeah, and also, the offensive line, too. Like, you're thinking about two quarterbacks with question marks, right? One is injury, one is inexperience, and we don't know how they're looking like so far because of that lack of game speed. Offensive line on paper, it's kind of similar to the Jets, where there's a lot of hype and there's a lot of expectation for how good that line will be. It's very similar with Atlanta. You look at a lot of the positional rankings, you're seeing Atlanta top five pretty much across the board. Yet the protection numbers weren't great last year, even though Desmond Ridder didn't help him out a ton as a young quarterback. That's another question mark we have as far as O-line this year for the Falcons.
Yeah, I mean, look, the Falcons have this perception that this line is really good. And yet when you watch it on tape, the tape doesn't match Pro Football Focus's view of it, nor the ability to slow people down when it matters most, when it's a drop-back pass game. I think you have to really understand when you're running the Arthur Smith offense or you're running this heavy play action offense, it really helps the lineman. It disguises. I think people would say to you, Ben, I don't know, the 49er offensive line, it's in the top five. No, it's not. No, it's not at all. Trent Williams is one of the best players in the league, but the rest of the line is very suspect. And if they have to throw drop back, they get exposed. It's one of the reasons why that stat is always around about Kyle Shanahan in the fourth quarter, and they can't win games.
Mm-hmm. Yep,
that's Atlanta, yeah, too.
How will Zach Robinson try to change that? That's what now, because it isn't Arthur Smith anymore, right? It's everything new. Raheem Morris comes in, Zach Robinson, the OC, where the speed is not something that blows you away by any means on the Falcons. You have two new quarterbacks, one a vet coming off injury, one a rookie the team traded up, you know, used with a high draft pick to get in Michael Penix. You know, how will that look now for an offense that had been pretty one-dimensional and didn't have that consistent big play threat we saw downfield as much as Drake London and Kyle Pitts showed flashes over the last couple of years?
Well, I mean, Kyle Pitts has to get healthy, right? I mean, he's been bothered by this knee. The problem is when Kyle Pitts is on the field, people don't say they're in 11 personnel, right? People say they're in 10 personnel because they count him as a receiver. When they bring another tight end on the field, you know, people complain in the analytical community that they're in 12. They're not. You can call him a tight end, but he's a wide receiver. Whereas Kelce, when he's on the field, you know he's a receiver, but you also know that he's going to block the edge and do a half decent. They're going to attempt to do that. With Pitts, he has no ability really to – he doesn't have any power to him, and that's a big problem. Now, he had the knee last year. Can he come back? But he doesn't put the fear of God like – I mean, he's the fifth pick overall in the draft, Ben.
Yep.
I mean, Parsons was in the same draft. I mean, you don't think they could use Parsons on their team?
And we've been waiting and waiting. I know injury's part of it. We've been waiting for Pitts to explode into the sort of player he was talking about on draft night. And then this year, there was a lot of really good defensive options out there for a team that most would have as a bottom 10 front seven unit, yet Michael Penix was the pick there at number 8. And you wonder who can be an impact guy on the defensive line. I have no idea when I look at the roster and see the names that are on the front seven.
Well, they're going to tell you Grady Jarrett can be the impact guy. He's coming off an ACL, you know? I mean, like, I don't know. You know their best defensive lineman was last year? Calais Campbell.
Yeah.
He had 19 quarterback hits. This is a team that completely thinks you're going to win playing Madden. Oh, if they drafted Latua or Brian Murphy, all of a sudden now we got a nice little team going here. We got really good offense. You know, we got three technique or we got an edge rusher. They don't have either.
Hey, I stand by. My years of Madden ability, Michael, I think would translate to an NFL coaching staff. But that's just me. I that's why I'm sitting here and saying that, not the actual, you know, coaches doing that. Alas, we'll go out to Miami. D. Orlando Ledbetter, he's standing by at joint practices with the Falcons and the Dolphins. We'll get his take on Atlanta when we come back.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Still to come on the Lombardi Line, little why not Wednesday, Michael. We'll throw some long shots at you. I've got a college football win total bet of the day. Excited to get into that here in our next 15 minutes. But right now, let's go out to the Progressive Guest Line. One of the best we have had in the NFL beat writing landscape. Progressive Guest Line right now welcomes in D. Orlando Ledbetter from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. A lot to talk about on the Atlanta Falcons as Orlando's down in Miami for joint practices here. Falcons and Dolphins going on right now as part of camp. Hey, thanks so much for giving us some time here. What have you made, first off, as far as how Kirk Cousins looks coming back from the Achilles injury? And then Michael Penix with the much-talked-about selection to take him in the top 10 of the draft.
Yeah, no question about it. Yeah, Kurt looked surprisingly well. They don't have any restrictions on him. He's not moving like, you know, 100%, but he's getting the ball out. They're not letting people around his legs right now. He did take off and run a couple times, and that got Raheem kind of upset. But it's looking pretty good for what you would think somebody 10 months out from a Achilles, ruptured Achilles. And of course, Michael Penix, we saw the pinpoint passing at Washington. So if you've been watching them, you know, like I did last year, watched about five of their games, you aren't surprised. They're not throwing a whole lot on his plate, but they are letting him move the ball and toss the ball down the field here. He saw it today here in Miami, and we've been seeing that at training camp too up in Flowery Branch.
Orlando, thanks for joining the show. We appreciate it. What does Kyle Pitts, I know he struggled with his knee injury last year. What does he look like in terms of coming back to being an explosive player at the position?
Yeah, he's playing a lot faster. That's what Coach Kevin Cougar, his tight end coach, has been stressing. He said when he went back and looked at the film from the first year, he was playing faster. He had injuries that, you know, were undisclosed the second year. Then he goes out with the knee. Then, you know, whispers about, you know, how diligent he was in rehabbing last year and, you know, just really wasn't able to put things together. So some of that was the quarterback play, but some of it was him too. So they're trying to put him back together and put him on that pedestal of, you know, where he was playing at coming out of Florida and how he performed his first year with Matt Ryan as the quarterback.
You can follow Orlando at DOrlandoAJC from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, Falcons beat writer. The injury news of the day, you were there watching. Rondale Moore goes down the non-contact injury, put into an air cast. Did not look good there for one of the couple wide receivers brought in this year to help fortify that particular position of pass catchers. Who's next, and who do you see kind of helping to balance the workload when you have a Pitts, you have a Drake London, but there's also a lot that you want more than just two guys, right, to help out a new quarterback coming into the system. Where do you expect the Falcons to go from here as far as that big injury there on Moore?
Yeah, you know, they also signed Darnell Mooney in free agency, so, you know, he's going to be counted on. They also picked up Ray McLeod, who's been basically a returner, and actually had him in front of Rondale Moore at the slot position. So that's the group right now. Now you got to start looking at the depth behind that group. And see if guys like Josh Ali, you know, practice squad guys that have been kept around for a couple of years like that can step forward and take the role that maybe Rondale was going to play. So you got to look at the depth of that group now and decide, hey, is anybody, going to play? And Rondale was catching a lot of balls from Penix, and that's probably what they were going to do on Friday. Now somebody else will have to step into that role and with the second team offense. And, you know, there's an opportunity in that wide receiver group as they tried to remake it over the offseason.
Orlando, talk about the defense. Who in the front seven? Is Grady Jarrett back to normal? And who in the front seven puts any fear of God in the team in terms of pass rush? They were 28th in the league in creating turnovers last year. They had a hard time getting the ball out. They have a hard time rushing the passer. Is there anyone in the front that you've noticed that you think can make a difference?
I've been, that's been the great question here since Vic Beasley got that 15.5 sacks with the help of Brian Cox and Dwight Freeney. So that's light years ago now. But the group here, they're trying to get the push in the interior with David Oyemata, Tyquan Graham, and Grady. And then your outside guys right now, or Lorenzo Carter and Arnold Ebiketie. Arnold Ebiketie's in his third year and been around the quarterback a lot, hasn't got a lot of sacks, but a lot of pressure. So he's a guy that you got to be like, okay, that's the person who needs to step forward and be their big sack guy. And, they know it. They see it. They're getting him the reps. He's looked good in one-on-ones down here in Miami. And Coach Jaquez Smith, who's coaching the outside linebackers, talked to us today and said, hey, look, yeah, you made a couple plays, but I need to start seeing that consistently every single day. And that's their challenge to push this kid to get there. And if he doesn't get there, then, you got a bunch of other outside linebacker types that will get opportunities. Damone Harris, James Smith Williams, some of the other guys in that group, Braylon Trace, a rookie out of Washington. So, Abakay's going to get their first shot, and then if he can't come through, they got some other options there on the roster.
Yeah, between front seven and secondary, both are positional groups viewed to be in the bottom half of the league. Just from a general perspective, Orlando, which of those two would you have more concern about as far as showing growth, showing development, if you're comparing those two groups right now, considering where they're at least coming into the start of the year?
Yeah, I'm more concerned about the secondary because at least up front, they got some young guys that maybe can have breakthroughs. So, you know, that's so maybe they can come. In the secondary, we got Mike Hughes, who's been a starter with four different teams and has never kept his starting job. So that's your starting right cornerback right now. So that's a concern. The offer to undersized nickel, who, you know, didn't hold up over the course of the season last year. He made some plays, but teams tried to run at him. So Richie Grant was the free safety last year. He got torched by every tight end he played against. So they got to try to resurrect him. He's a second-round pick. So, yeah, I feel more comfortable about the kids up front than the secondary group.
Good stuff from D. Orlando Ledbetter. Follow him at D. Orlando AJC, covering the Falcons for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Really nice to catch up with you, Orlando. Appreciate the time. Enjoy the rest of camp here.
Thank you, Orlando. Sure.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Absolutely, 100%. It brings up, too, like why I wanted to ask that to Orlando here to close the segment. One of your burning questions we didn't get to, it's about the secondary and where the man-to-man coverage, how that is going to look. Because as much as we've focused, too, on where the lack of bodies are on the defensive line, I still have big question marks about that secondary, how good it actually can be this year.
You know, all this conversation about Brandon Ayuk's fifth year and Jamar Chase's fifth year and everybody, A.J. Terrell, they picked up the fifth year, but there's been no conversation, right? What does that tell you? That tells you he hasn't been the great player. They think he's worthwhile keeping, but they don't think he's worthwhile extending. And I think to me, when you add in the combination of no pass rush, the Vic Beasley's the last double-digit sacker they've had, as Orlando mentioned. I mean, I don't see it. Look, they've passed up so many defensive players to build this offense. If you've invested this much in an offense, shouldn't you be the greatest show on turf?
You'd think you'd at least be trending in that direction. AJ Terrell, the book on him is really, really talented, but super inconsistent. And that's fine when you're a rookie. That's kind of what you expect. But in the sense now you're picking up a fifth-year option, you would think you would be past that, just like you would think you would be past mediocre offense when you are building and investing the number of pieces that the Falcons have been on that side of the ball.
Yeah, I mean, look, they can't – look, at some point, and this is where I think Ryan Nielsen did a wonderful job last year. They were the third-best team on third-down defense. They were the fourth-best team in red zone defense. I mean, I don't see how Jimmy Lake and Raheem Morris are going to improve on those two numbers. I really don't. And if they don't improve on those numbers, how do you improve on seven wins?
Nobody's also asking the question of Raheem Morris, who's been so well lauded for his job as a coordinator since he's really struggled as a head coach first time around in Tampa Bay. Will he have learned from those mistakes? Are we willing to just kind of give him a pass because he was super young? But we conveniently forget, Michael, it was really ugly from an in-game coaching perspective with Morris from really week one when he was in Tampa that first go-around.
Yeah, no question. I mean, look, there's no guarantee, right? I mean, look, but again, Bill Belichick wasn't even their top three, so it should tell you how good Raheem is.
Yeah, well, Raheem, young boys in the room. He doesn't have the chef's hat on. That was probably what distinguished him, Michael. He was not flipping burgers.
That's why, yeah.
Up in Foxborough, apparently.
Exactly.
I don't know. Alas, here we go. Atlanta, 9.5 by the win total. It's always probably a discerning sort of topic where it makes you a little bit uneasy when a team is being lauded and hyped simply because, well, the schedule's really easy. Like, how many years have we seen a super easy schedule turn into actually not that easy of a schedule?
I hate that. It drives me crazy. What when you're a bad team, is there an easy schedule?
Yeah.
Like, really, when you're not a great team, every game's hard. The NFL, most games are decided by 7 points or less. We're not talking about college where, okay, we're at Alabama, but we're going to play Murray State, Jacksonville State, East Carolina. Oh, that's an easy schedule if you're Alabama. The NFL doesn't have that.
No, it does not. Maybe need a little bit more than just a soft schedule. All right, why not Wednesday? Some final thoughts next on the Lombardi Line.
This This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Back for the final time on this Wednesday edition of the Lombardi Line. Big thanks to Elliot Bowman, our producer, Jeremy Wengel, technical director, everybody else behind the scenes here at our Circus Sportsbook studio. I'm Ben Wilson with Michael Lombardi. We are about to get into Why Not Wednesday. Excited to close the show that way, Michael. But you ready for, first off, a little Sun Belt win total action this year? Fun Belt. Let's go.
Love it.
To the Sun Belt. You know, to really turn into a good league as far as group of fives, it is the Sun Belt. Did you know, Michael, 9 different teams based on win totals are projected to go bowling this year for the Sun Belt? I mean, it is a sneakily deep, deep conference when you think about it. It's not just App State anymore. Like, Texas State has really gone on the rise. Yeah. Louisiana is still a solid team. James Madison, one of the best FCS to FBS stories out there. And you can go down on the list, even as far down to, you know, even say like a Marshall, Arkansas State, Coastal Carolina.
How about Coastal Carolina?
Yeah.
Coastal Carolina, right?
All those teams. Arkansas State of that lowest win total at 5.5, but that's heavily juiced to the over. I'd certainly believe Arkansas State has the talent to go bowling this year. So what all happens when you get tons and tons of talent dispersed around a lot of different teams in a conference? Well, there are going to be some teams on the short end of the stick here. And unfortunately for me this year, Michael, Old Dominion is a team that does not have much to get excited about on the offensive side of the ball. Their top running back, Kadarius Callaway, and top wide receiver, Raymelo Murphy, each transfer out. Callaway to Cal, Murphy to Arizona. And that offensive line, it was just a walking horror show last year. 62 sacks allowed, most in the FBS. Allowed over 100 tackle for loss last year. And you're talking now an improved, deeper, physical conference. Outlook to me, not good for Old Dominion in 2024. The one bright spot's on defense, the Sun Belt Defensive Preseason Player of the Year, linebacker Jason Henderson. He is back, but he's also coming off serious injury, leg injury at the end of last year. That is what is really holding together this team in Old Dominion. But without the offensive cohesion, Old Dominion was dead last of all 133 FBS teams last year, Michael, in time of possession. They're basically the Patriots version of college football, basically playing a doubleheader as far as their defense every single game. So at 4.5 on a win total, it's juiced -130. I got that at Westgate here in town in Vegas. 4.5 under in a schedule where, based on the preseason power ratings, likely only favored in one game. They only get to play 2 of the bottom 5 power-rated Sun Belt teams in one of those games. Georgia State's on the road. So you're looking at a team set with a win total of 4.5, maybe only favored in 1 or 2 games at best. Easy under for me there in a league that has gotten a whole lot better over the last couple seasons.
Let me add something to your ideas here, because I think this is important. You open up, if you're Old Dominion, you open up at South Carolina. Then you've got East Carolina and Virginia Tech. Okay, now, let's face it, East Carolina is not a dominant, but you're playing Virginia Tech and South Carolina, teams that have been recruiting a lot better, bigger, stronger, more physical players. And so you get done those 3 games, all of a sudden, now you lose 2 or 3 key players of your returning 10 that starter, and now it's really going to be trouble.
And I'm already high on Bowling Green. If you missed that, I'm on over 6.5 wins for Bowling Green. That's a tough non-con game. You're going right into Sun Belt play. You go on the road to a MAC team that has a ton back from last year and a very, very solid defense to boot as well for Bowling Green. That was the strength of the Falcons a year ago. That's a bad matchup right away for Old Dominion. So we'll book that one here, Michael. 4.5 under -130 on the Monarchs for 2024. And it's a reminder, too, we've got previews of every single FBS team, all 134 of them this year, even Kennesaw State, who's a new member here to FBS and Conference USA. With our college football betting guide, you can become a VSiN Pro subscriber, get all those guides available right now, and we have a special offer just this week, 3 years, $350 of VSiN Pro access, vsin.com/special if you're a first-time subscriber on that. All right, let's wrap up the show. We love doing this on Wednesdays. Why not Wednesdays? Taking a look at some long shots.
Question. Maybe a stupid one, but I'm just spitballing here.
Can it make you say why not?
That wasn't a stupid question.
It's time for Why Not Wednesday.
I mean, why not?
You know when they say it's so crazy it just might work?
Maybe this won't be so crazy. And we might start here with a why not, Michael, because you seem to be down on Atlanta. I know that based on just looking at a schedule is not enough to say, oh yeah, that team is going to be really good in the NFL, the way things tend to work year to year. And why not Wednesday? Kirk Cousins, I don't think he's going to, 40-plus pass touchdowns at 12-1. That's a little bit crazy. But how about the potential dual forecast here to just fade Atlanta? You want to go Saints, Bucks, dual forecast finishing in the top 2? That's a +550. It's at least intriguing in a division that might just be a total dumpster fire this year.
Yeah, I mean, I think that I would do that. I like the Kirk Cousins to throw 40 plus touchdown. No, I would say no on that. I know it's 12-1. What's the no? If he's throwing 40, gets you 12-1. What's the no?
That it's it gets a lot you? Of minus
I certainly would. Huh?
It's a big number in front of the minus. You'd have to lay. So probably not for your average better. Unfortunately, probably not something you want to do. But I get what you're saying.
Yeah, I think to me that, you know, I mean, look, everybody just assumes he's going to pick off where he left off. Even Orlando Ledbetter, he made it, you know, he says he looks the same, but, you know, we had not the same movement, which I think is a little bit bleeding.
That's why, the top two, the forecast, you know, Saints, Bucks, like there's issues to go around for every team. It's not like we're, you know, it's not like these would be bets we're really, really high, say, on what New Orleans and Tampa Bay represents, but path is there. You could see this turn into an NFC least type season, certainly for the NFC South, plus 550 on that top two. These are the dual forecasts, and I like these, Michael, because basically what it is, it's a two-team parlay to finish in any order in the top two. You don't have to go exact. It's not 1-2 in order, and as we'll continue on here, see if these juicy prices are enticing. Are we in enough of a panic state on San Francisco to say they'll fall out of the top two? This would be a little more, as far as the odds, especially, this would be a little crazier. Why not Wednesday? Seahawks and Rams to be the top two in the NFC West. 8-1. Any way you would be sold on that?
You get me to buy that. I would buy that. I really,
really?
Would. I think to me, it's 8-1. Why not? I think Seattle's going to be better. I think the Rams, even though the 49ers have their number, I hope it doesn't happen for my son's sake. But, you know, for me, I think to me, you know, the Niners have always, after a Super Bowl, have had that downward time. We'll see. You know, they got to stay healthy. And, you know, you got to see where they are defensively. But it's worth it at 8-1. I think, you know, I'd like a little bit better odds, but I'd take it at 8-1.
Yeah, I still have enough trust in the infrastructure for San Francisco. You know, this is sort of the sky is falling, the sort of general narrative right now on them. And granted, I would not be stunned if the Jets go in there Monday night to start the year and win outright. I really wouldn't, Michael. I feel like that number, which is 5.5, is only going to keep dropping as we get closer to the start of the season. And people realize just how good the Jets roster is on paper. And there's all the noise here about San Francisco. Having said all that, the Niners might be more of a good buy low team after they struggle to start the year, if we're thinking of all the injuries that are happening right now. So I kind of parse it into two categories there. What say you at least on that Monday night game to start the year?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, look, I think you're right about the in-game. I think in-game sometimes, or in-season, should say, really kind of has some value to it.
It's a tough schedule as well for the Niners. So, I want to see where the health goes, and that's been a big question for the Niners over the last couple of years. As we continue, why not Wednesday? This one I like. This is one I'm shopping around right now. You can find almost 4-1 on this. Ravens-Browns to be the top two, where you are essentially betting against Pittsburgh and Cincinnati to climb into the top two of the AFC North. It takes having some conviction, especially on the Cleveland Browns side of things, Michael, which have been a very polarizing team. So can I sell you on the top two in the North being the Ravens and Browns in the AFC?
You think 3.5-1? I don't think that's good enough for that number. Do you?
I would say, like, I'd
want... locking your money up for a long time at 3.5. There should be a rule that you don't lock, you know, you have to have at least X to lock your money up for 8 months.
Yeah, that's fair. In the bet like this, 3.5-1, is a fair price. Is it tremendous value? No, but it is a way, instead of necessarily betting on, you know, some of these division futures where, like, do you really want to, you know, be that highly invested in Cleveland? This just is an alternative way to bet that. That's where I look at it as saying it's enticing, because I certainly believe that Baltimore has enough still in the tank to be very, very successful, and that Cleveland is sort of the bet on there. So that's why I just feel like it's better value as far as plus 350. But I get if I can't sell you on it. I can't sell you on everything. That's okay. That's why not Wednesday. That's why we're doing it. Here, that is the AFC North dual forecast. How about the NFC North dual forecast, Michael? Bears and Packers, that's also plus 350. And this is one, I mean, the way the North is set up, especially on the NFC side, I don't have nearly the same convictions I do say as the NFC. So not one I would want to get invested in whatsoever here, especially not with the Chicago Bears being included in the top two here, plus 350.
I mean, everything the Bears get in, it's overpriced. Like, the Ravens and the Browns are two good teams. They're at 350. The Bears were a bad team last year, and they're at 350 with the Packers. Like, every time you got Chicago involved in a mix, it's a bad number. You're paying a tax on Chicago. I don't understand. There's no way you'd get me to do this one, because you're paying – it's just because Chicago people, they love to bet their team, and you pay a tax on it. Yeah. It's not worthwhile. This should be 5-1, 6-1.
Should probably be greater. Yeah. No doubt on that. Why not Wednesday? Top two, plus 350 on the Bears and the Packers. All right. We wrap things up here on this edition of the Lombardi Line. I love Why Not Wednesday every single week here. Caleb Williams, most interceptions, by the way, 10-1. That could be a bonus Why Not Wednesday. Regardless, Michael, great to be with you as always here. We have Sharp Money coming up next. Thanks to our producer, Elliot Bowman. I'm Ben Wilson saying so long here for everybody on the Lombardi Line. We'll catch you all again tomorrow. Sharp Money coming up next right here on VSiN.